when I was 1 year old, I was a wolf and loudmouth. A lot of us wolves are big mouths.
Huh? Oh, yeah?
Anyhow, to give the people a little peace and relaxation, my mother took me out to the beach, which was about 50 yards away.
Uh-huh.
And there was a dead whale on the Guani Quest, a little bay there near Kwasiatchi Cove. Anyhow, there was a dead whale on the beach. So I'm Tlaxiwe. That's the name she gave me.
Tlaxiwe.
Tlaxiwe. Dead whale on the beach. Now, she could have given me a Mahinu, which is killer whale. I don't like that.
But no,
I'm Tlaxiwe. I'm dead whale on the beach. If you see me walking across the street, don't say, hey, dead whale on the beach, because I almost have bingo dover.
You'll get me with your bingo dover.
You'll get crowned. Hey, my name is Tlaxiwe. I am Tlaxiwe. In my heart, I'm Tlaxiwe.
Not my
I'd like to have been I might have got into more fights, but I'm Tlaxiwe.
Awesome.
So that's how I got my name.
Mm-hmm.
My Christian name is Reginald Gilbert Wilson. The missionaries give us a name to try to save our wretched souls, but they didn't, huh?
No.
I'm still... My soul is still going to go to the Cape Munch all the way. In Lummi, they have a religion too, the old Indian religion. And it still holds true. We're going back to our reserves. That's the way I feel. We're down to 1928, now 20. I had a little time on the Cape Munch Reserve. In 1932, Todd, the Indian agent from Ellers Bay said to my dad, he's going to residential school. I went to Kokalisha Residential School, huh? So, I was still speaking Indian, huh? And the residential school, you couldn't do that. My brothers and sisters, they kind of took hold of me, yeah? So, that was in 1932.
How old were you?
5 years old.
Five.
In 1937, I got pleurisy, yeah? At the like TB.
Okay.
Anyhow, I was so bad the residential school thought I was going to die, so they sent me back to Cape Munch. And at Cape Munch, my father, he had another husband, another wife that by then, a younger one. Anyhow, I was playing on the stairs like you're insuring my towel, and I don't know what happened. Now, pleurisy, I don't know anything about, but it has to do with your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I was throwing up blood, and my dad thought sure I was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So he took me across to Campbell River Hospital, and my stepmother thought I was a goner, so they got Amos Johnson, that was Effie's dad, and Audemars, her mother, to come and see me. And they stayed with me about 2 days. In 2 days, like, even go looking back, I really thought I was gone. So I started getting better, and I believe humbly that Effie's dad, I think they just willed me to get well, and I did. I really believe that you can will or wish somebody well. Anyhow, I really believe that they got me well. So I went back to Coquelita, and Coquelita at that time was really worried about TB, so they made me a test case in 1937 or whatever it was, 38. They put me on the bed. They made a big preventorium there to study TB. Anyhow, I had a lay down there for 2 years. I did nothing but lay on the bed. And all I could do, they'd give me something to read. And I think they really did me good, because when I went to UBC, I didn't have no problem with my English or anything like that. And math was nothing to me. All us Wolfens are really good in math. They can put two and two together and get 22. And you know I'm crazy?
No.
You wouldn't think so, would you? Show her the film.
Did you want to see the video of his jump?
Sure.
Okay.
Are you skydiving?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just pause this.
I'm going to show you this.
I'm just bringing up a point that I'm still crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a National Defense poster?
The other one.
And then this one's from January 30th to 2006 in the summer.
Yeah. They usually get them at the veterans. Or the, I guess, Remembrance Day. He always, well, before he went up to Campbell River, he went down to Vancouver every year and did the march there. So.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'll show her the video.
We'll look
at
that.
I just want to make a point that I'm so crazy.
He wants everybody to know.
That's absolutely fabulous. So you don't think you would do it again?
I think I would.
Yeah?
I've had 107 jumps of being a paratrooper.
107?
Yeah, I've had 29 free falls. Well, 30 now.
30 free falls.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey. I'll tell you something.
Okay.
You know Kitty Wells and all of them, the country singers. Anyhow, this one guy had the Don Marquez in Clarksville, Tennessee, and he had the big amphitheater at the cave, huh? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he had people come, about 10,000 at a time, not come. And he used to pay us to jump out of the plane, come down on the lake, huh? The first time I did, you know, we were getting $75 a jump, huh? Mm-hmm. So I went up there and then I free-falled into the lake. And I was looking down at the lake. It's coming up quick. I pulled the chute and the chute opened okay, huh? And I kept looking at this water. It's coming up in a hurry. So I pulled the release on the chute, and I fell, and I fell, and I fell. Must have fallen about 150 feet down, huh? Because when you're looking out of the water, it looks close.
But it's right.
I land in the water and come up, and everybody was clapping for me. They thought I did that on purpose. Yeah, we used to jump for Kitty Wells and all the
Roy Acuff. Roy Acuff, they're like old country singers.
Yeah, he owned the place. Roy Acuff owned the place.
Yeah.
He was a multi-millionaire. I was always the chief to him.
Yeah.
That was a good time. But you were back there in 1928. Anyhow, you got your...
I'm ready.
Ready, how? You know, I was in the residential school all the way through to 1942, and my brother Charles, he was 2 years older than me. He was 17 at the time, and he was determined to go in the army because that's all the propaganda was, that they needed us in the army, and he couldn't go and joined because he was an Indian, huh?
Oh.
So my dad and I from Cape Mudge, we spent the whole day to go down to the Sinclair building on Hastings Street. And Arneel was the name then. Charles couldn't get in because he was an Indian. So we went in. And Arneel made him a whitey, took away all his Indian privileges. And in an hour we walked him down Grendel Street, two blocks. They inducted him into the army. So he spent time just these 6 or 8 months, Fort Saskatchewan, Camp Borden, I think. Mm-hmm. And he went overseas, and he landed in Normandy on D-Day plus one, the second day. Mm-hmm. And he was with the Calgary Highlanders, 2nd Division.
Okay.
And he went all the way into Appledorn Hall in 45. Then he come back, and we met him in Vancouver and took him back to Arneel and made him an Indian again, huh? and took away all his veterans' benefits.
Oh, no.
$120,000 worth of benefit, you know. Mm-hmm. And the way I was at UBC, and Charles showed up, and he got his benefits under being the Indian rights, huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, before I get carried, I come back from Korea, you know, and I was at Fort Campbell, and the first meeting, company meeting I went to, they say, who is from the mountains or the West Coast? Of course, I raised my hand. He said, you're going to be ski instructor.
Ski instructor.
Yeah. So I become a ski instructor in Leadville, Colorado, huh? Anyhow, we were in the sticks for about, you know, in away from civilization for 3 months, and I was getting thirsty for a beer, huh? Anyhow, I took my company and I made a trail through the pines, huh? And a lot of them crashed right into the trees and had broken shoulders and everything else, huh? And I come back to camp and they says, they want you at headquarters, battalion headquarters. I thought, oh, hell, I'm going to get reamed but good, huh, because they had too many kids first. I went into there and there was my brother Charles. He had joined the Air Force and the AC-2, which is one rung above being the lowest, huh? Anyhow, on his lapel, they have golden albatross, huh? And everybody was really ginger around them, you know? And I said to myself, Auntie Charles, I know what's going on, because they thought he was a colonel. I said, you go and ask for a 3-day pass for me, just tell them you haven't seen me in about 10 years. So he went to the battalion commander and he said, I hadn't seen my brother in about 10 years. I'd like to spend a holiday with him. Can you get him a pass? And he no sooner said that, and it was written out. But the date, the ending date was known there. I could have stayed there forever, huh? Anyhow, they were way up in the mountains, huh? Anyhow, they give us one of those snowmobiles to go down about 10 miles down the road. Then they give us a big juice and they have to take us down to Lesville. I spent 3 days with them. I'm just telling you this because it really happened. Huh? It shows you I'm just Sergeant Belko all over again. Huh? my company commander, when I come back, he says, I know what you pulled there. I'll let it go this time, but if it ever happens again, you're going to get court-martialed. You know? But he knew what had happened. I told you I didn't volunteer, huh?
No, you didn't.
I got drafted.
You got drafted.
Yeah, I was in Astoria, Oregon. I tore up the first two draft notes. I said, they can't do that to an Indian. And the foreman where I was working said that somebody at the gate that wants to see you. I said, well, I don't know what, I'll go down. Went down there, and there was the olive giraffe notice. I couldn't tear it up because it was in a big hand. Federal officer said, you put 2 years in the Army or go back to the Lummi Reservation and never come off it or go back to Canada. I thought, well, that's a pretty good option because I was a pacifist. Who the hell can shoot somebody else? Anyhow, I figured, well, I'll go and tell Mom I'm going on my way to Canada. So I finally caught up with her and I told her what had happened and told her I was going on my way back to Canada, and I could hear her voice right now. She said, no, son, you go in the Army and take care of Brother Joe. My kid brother had got drafted. So I went in the Army just on her telling me. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell her, hey, that's not the way it is. Because those old ladies don't know the way the government works. So that's how I went in the Army. I took care of Joe one time.
One time?
Yeah, in San Francisco. He was hit on his way to Korea, and I figured as long as I was in the Army, the quickest way is airborne. I'm going to get killed right away. That was my thought. So that's why I went airborne. And I went Ranger.
It's 187th Airborne?
Yeah. That's how I really got in the Army. And I was telling the guy this morning that I was a pacifist until there was mortars and machine guns started hissing at me. Then I changed my mind about being a pacifist.
It's a good idea.
Really? It's the truth, just the way it happened. Anyhow, I got some mortar shells and stuff in me, and I got out in Fort Lewis. Then they shipped me to Fort Campbell right away. And he's airborne. I was airborne qualified.
How old were you?
I was 26 when they drafted me. Just old, just under the age of draft.
Okay.
That's how I got in the Army. But I was still kind of that shame of being in the Army, still hungry, still hugged me, until I buried my brother Charles. Then I knew I was had been in the Army, and so for him I put on my veteran's outfit since then. And really, being airborne and a ranger, you have something to be proud of. There was quite a few washed out on the training. I couldn't take it. But with me, the rougher they made it, the better I liked it. That's just the way. I'm so crazy. Really, I am. Now we're back to 1939, huh?
That's right.
No, that's That's why I'm in the army, a veteran. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because I wanted it that way, it's just the way it happened. So you more or less in the long run got a gist of what I am, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be marching with the veterans. I'm really proud that I'm with the veterans. Like, you see their Chinese veterans? Mm-hmm. They all volunteered. I didn't. I got drafted. Well, I'm proud of my service now.
Mm-hmm. Where all did you serve in the end?
Huh?
Where all have you served?
Koji in Japan, Korea, Augsburg, Germany, Fort Campbell, Camp Breckenridge. Oh, these are airborne. And all over the state, Alaska, Greenland, all of them. Airborne, that's the United States FISTA. They say airborne. We're especially mean, I guess, with the reputation we have. We're tough and don't give a damn. That's just the way everybody thinks of us, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's true. I guess most of the guys that I served with didn't give a damn one way or another, you know? Mm-hmm. But they were proud to be airborne. So, start your questions.
Start my questions? I have so many now. Do you want a glass of water or anything?
Yeah, I'll have a glass of water.
Give you a quick break there.
It was coming out of the ground.
The water?
Still on the construction. Mm-hmm. And I figured, well, I need to get to Cape Mud to go fishing, huh? So, I figured just for some unusual thing, I'll just hitchhike from Prince Rupert all the way into Vancouver, and that's what I did. It took me a week. And I had the cab drive me. Passport Avers runs them. This was an evening. I figured, well, I'll get a ride. I look too pitiful for anybody just to leave. So I started walking, and I walked. It got dark. Heard these wolves on the hallway. They sound close. And then they sound like they're long distance away, wolves. There was a lot of wolves around there. Yeah, I was glad when the morning come and I got a ride into Hazleton, mm-hmm. Kissed the ox.
I just have to go do a quick errand and I'll be right back.
Sure.
Stayed there about 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. From what I remember. No, I'm just kidding. I knew quite a few people.
Really?
From Kiskeyox, yeah, the Johnson, the Harrises.
I'm related to the Harrises.
Margaret Harris.
That's my relative.
There's two Margaret Harris. Mm-hmm. The one that's about my age, about mm-hmm. 70, mm-hmm. She was a beautiful girl, but she was meaner.
Sorry, Margaret.
She was meaner than mean. And Judith Morgan was another one that was really close to me. Mm. Yeah, Judith and I were writing back and forth. She was in Leonardwood in Missouri, I think it was. Well, before I went into the service, once I got into the service, I figured, well, there ain't no sense in getting serious with nobody. So I never did write to her again. I was going to call Judith Morgan. She married a preacher. I don't know. But then I heard they had got divorced, so I don't know. If she's still alive, I'd like to tell her hello, huh? Because I saw a good bit of her. She was so talented. She could just draw. I heard she was in education. I don't know. Yeah, I know the Robinson's up that way.
Mm-hmm. So that was before or after you were in the service?
After. Mm.
What was it like for you when you got out?
I got married, and my wife and I went to Washington, D.C. I got discharge money, and we went to Washington, D.C. and all over. It was hard on me. Everybody, our times were hard. So, the only job opening was a house electrician, residential wiring. So I did that. Then I enrolled in as an apprentice, IDW apprentice, and that's how I earned my living, was being an electrician. I become a master electrician.
Okay.
Not just my DW, but I was just under electrical engineer.
Okay.
We had to correct a lot of the engineers' goof-ups.
Yeah.
Because they goof up royally.
Wait.
So that's how I made my living all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of money. First, most of the construction workers are boozers, so I boozed a good bit. Till my wife told I had 7 kids. Anyhow, she said, you quit drinking or get out of the house, and I had 7 kids. So I just quit drinking.
Mm.
You know, we had them 7 kids, four boys and 3 girls, and the way she took care of that, she brought me a big color TV with a remote.
You're going to learn to watch TV now.
So that's how we got the end of the line.
What year were you discharged?
Roughly. 53.
53?
Mm-hmm.
So you were in for how long in total?
No, 53.
Mm-hmm.
55 when I come back from Augsburg, Germany.
Okay. And you went in
51.
That's a lot of jumps in a short period of time.
When I come back, I was sent to Fort Benning. Mm-hmm. I put all the kids through jump school. I got to jump every time with them.
Oh, okay.
That was a lot of fun. They had these 250 towers where they raised them up in the parachute and let them go. They raised me up and left the class. Well, he's gonna pull the cords and go this way. But one march, I jumped, and I went right into the steel towers.
Oh!
My prints are still in the steel towers.
Your prints are still on it.
Yeah, I had an awful time getting out of my chute, but I wasn't looking to go with that iron. That's how I know my prints are still on there. It was getting down, it wasn't too bad because I was down on the crossbar. Was crawling around to the center was, did most of it on my waist. And the wind was really blowing. Oh, and let me tell you, it was funny to me. Anyhow, I was putting kids through jump school, and I was not the master jumper, I was his helper. And the kids were getting sent to Korea. Anyhow, you tap the guys out, and Sergeant Tebow, he was a three up, two down sergeant, sergeant first class. Anyhow, this one jumper, I remember, Ryder, he froze in the door. And people tried to push him out, and he wouldn't go. So people took him back, and he said, don't just knock him out in this rider sidestep. And people went off.
Did he ever shoot him?
Yeah, he had a T-12. We had the most fun with it. Him when we got him to the NCO club. I had to tap both sides of Lawson Field at Fort Benning. That's just one of the incidents that I remember. Things come back to me, you know.
What was your first jump like?
Kind of a blur.
Yeah?
Kind of. I was scared, of course, but in my mind, I know millions have done it before, and I know I'm as good or better than most of those millions, so I went out. After the second jump, then I kind of realized, you know.
Open your eyes when you jump?
Yeah. Yeah, after a while, just teasing the guy to be peeling an orange going out. Just being an asshole, you know. Just the way I was. Or eating an apple.
Doing some knitting.
Yeah. Hey, that's how my service was. Most of those guys I marched with, I really respect them because they did it voluntarily, yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, I was drafted. I know eventually I got to be good jumper, and we went to Nicaragua. Like the U.S. used to use the airborne just for a threat, huh? Mm-hmm. Somebody give them trouble. It was us. I went.
So you jumped into Nicaragua?
No, we went there. So what I really found out was United Fruit. Mm-hmm. Dulles had owned that, or was that really a lot of money? And the place threatened his fruit company. He'd sent the airborne in. And most of the time I was with the 11th Airborne. Out of the 101st or 11th, they'd scramble you. They'd get you from the bear joints, huh? Because mm-hmm. we weren't allowed city clothes, huh? Mm. So they knew we were, what do you need you with? And then if you were with the unit they needed, you're gone. What really sobers you up is when you get live ammo. That's when you figure out serious.
You had live ammo in Nicaragua?
Yeah, I'm too cold. I've had live ammo. The only place I've heard lock and load was in Korea, though. When we were in Nicaragua, we just stayed at the airport in our fatigues. Mm-hmm. And it was about 105 degrees there. Oh, our fatigues would be just soaked by the 7 o'clock in the morning.
Who was your CO in Korea?
Sergeant Nelson was one of them.
Sergeant Nelson?
No, I meant he was Captain Nelson.
Okay.
Sergeant Lusicki was my master sergeant.
Okay.
Oh, let me tell you. Now that I think we made a jump at Sukchon, Korea. Then We were waiting in the pad getting ready to go, and the guys were there, and they were all sitting together, huh? Kind of in a bundle. So I went there just to be in the crowd, huh? Anyhow, they had a big doobie going around. Marijuana. And it come by me. I said, I can't back up now. No. I took a just about choked from the smoke, because I never did smoke. And got through that, passed it around. Then coming up. And of course, once we got on the plane, I went and had all my gear ready, and I went to sleep. We had about 35, 40 minutes ride. And I went to sleep, and the first thing I heard was, stand up, hook up. checking equipment. And I jumped with a big GP bag, that's a general purpose bag, with all machine gun bullets. And you come right out of the plane, and the first thing you do is pull the cord for your GP bags, you fall right down from you. And that, I remember that. Wondering whether I'd get that bag gone before I landed, you know. You know, like World War II, they jumped where they had a little time. In Korea, we jumped at about 600-700 feet, and it takes 240 feet for your chute to fully deploy.
That's low, so you would jump at 600 feet.
600-700 feet.
Oh my goodness.
And those planes are going just like that because they're all at about 105 miles an hour. They're just that stall, just barely stalling. Yeah, I remember those two jumps. We jumped to save the some Canadians were killed. Gooks had them locked down on one hill, and they were about out of ammo. So we jumped into the Gook behind the Gook lines to relieve the. And we did. I told that to a veteran from Alberta. He was telling me he had been with a Princess Pat. I told him, I know the Princess Pat. I mentioned the hill that we jumped to give them relief. And the guy cried.
Who was him?
Just come back to him. Come back to me every now and then.
Sounds tough.
Yeah, I never know when I'm gonna fall apart, huh? It's usually something to do with Charles. I really feel for him. I know he went through hell. This veteran, Wheel from Ottawa, he just come in. He's from Holland, but he's in the government now. He's with the Aboriginal Vets. I forget his name. I was telling him about that. Yeah, his dad and mom are Dutch, and he was Dutch, and I was telling him about going there in Augsburg. And tell him I was in my jump outfit, and then I started telling him about Charles being with the 2nd Div Calgary Highlanders, and they kept buying me beer because of that. They really think the world of Canadians. I think the Canadians make as good a soldier as anybody, you know. I don't know whether they have to prove it or not. They all know what the Canadian government does to you. They're really prejudiced against the Indians or First Nations because they're given very little natural resources to them. Billy, my kid, my other brother, Bill Wilson, mm-hmm. he says we're going to be coming to the oil money. Maybe our kids will, but we'll be gone before then.
Bill Wilson is your brother?
Yeah. He's my kid brother. Ethel Pearson is my stepmother, huh?
Okay.
They call her Effrey.
Effrey?
She's given 5 pot lashes. And where did she get the money from all them pot lashes? From my dad. My dad was a millionaire in the way back when. Depression? Mm-hmm. He was a millionaire. Wow. And where he got his money, he had a big packer, mm-hmm. and he used to buy clams up Gopher Down all over, and they had a big load of clams, and they were going from Kwasiatko to Campbell River, and the tug was on the iron mike, mm-hmm. and cut them right in half, and there was Albert Wilson and Humpty Dick and Dad and Effrey and Sonny. Well, in the confusion, Dad had a whole, Calvin was a young boy, huh? And Effrey had a whole Calvin, they wouldn't let go. So when they settled it, quite a few years after that, Dad got a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that's where Effrey got his money to. She gave 5 potlatches. Only.
What was your dad's name?
Charles William Walton.
Okay. From Cape Mudge?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, he bought fish, for V.T. Packers and Nelson Brothers and ABC.
What did he think of you going in the military?
He didn't know about it until I was in there. And I come back from Korea and I was just stress and fatigue, and I went to see him. He had grabbed a hold of my hand. He took me everywhere, just showed me off. Yeah, I think that was one time he was really proud of me. But I wasn't proud at that time, I wasn't.
No.
I was just proud to be airborne. Mm-hmm. Lean and mean, no, I'm just mean.
Sounds good. Did you get any decorations or awards for your service?
Purple Heart.
Purple Heart? Mm.
Yeah. I don't know where I got rid of it. Somewhere in my travels. Yeah, maybe I need another color TV with another one.
Keep you still. Well, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
You're okay? Do you want to take a stop for now?
Okay.
Okay.
18 Nation Harris, he says, I've got a favor. You don't have to tell me whatever it is I'll do. She says, there's this lady I need you to keep for a little while. It was Myrtle Poor Bear.
Okay.
She was the witness for the FBI. So I kept her for about 6 months. I was getting paranoid. I'd see a car coming down the street. I'd say, well, the FBI are after me. But they never did.
Never did.
She got lonesome for her kids, so we smuggled her across the Canadian border into Winnipeg, I think it was, and she went down. Yeah, Gina asked me to, be screened by the police. I said, well, okay, but it was the Canadian police, was the FBI, it was the FBI down the road.
So your family's got quite the history being involved with the Pelche trials, incident of a koala.
Effrey and Donna and Billy, they set up the UNN.
They were the planet that adopted him when he came to Canada.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, again, I don't have his book. My daughter has it. But in his prison writings that he has, he's dedicated that to his stepmom and my aunt.
Yeah, Leonard Peltier is my adopted brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they adopted him in a potlatch. Oh. And so they're trying to keep him in Canada, and that didn't work. So, so they extradited him.
Too bad.
Yeah. So, it was just really neat listening to Kelly tell her story about the whole thing, too. Like, I've listened to her, and it's something I've always been interested in, and pass that down to my daughter, Sarah, and stuff. So just to keep it kind of going.
Donna come to me one time, he says, I need a favor, whatever. Says, I need you to smuggle me some beer across because they had a beer strike on. I said, okay, whatever. 19 cases they loaded above my station and he drove straight across the border.
Yeah,
but I've done anything. You are so precious to me. That's Kelly's mom. And Chris, the youngest girl, looks exactly like Donna. I saw her last year. I said, Donna? I knew that was Chris. She just loves being compared to being Donna, huh?
Yeah.
She looks exactly like Donna.
So I guess Chris is at Chris Jr. then, and Chris is Mickey's brother.
That's right.
Okay. So, yeah, so she was married to Mickey's brother's son.
Mickey's nephew.
Mickey's nephew. That's who she was married to.
Yeah.
So that's where your cook name comes from.
Yes.
See, my cook name comes from my marriage to somebody that's not even native that's in the States. But we all fit in because he's my Uncle Mickey, because he was married to my Auntie Donna, and my cousins are cooks, so always trying to explain the cook
relationship. I know exactly. Because I'm Jessica Wood, and my family's from Prince Rupert and Hazleton, Glen Vowell. So my grandpa's from Port End, and his wife is from Kitkatla, and I have Nishka family, but I'm all northern, but I was raised in Ellert Bay and Solgwadi and Port Hardy, so I'm not, but married. I was raised there and I was married in there, so.
Oh, yeah.
I used to quackle around pretty good, but.
I was a skiff man, Johnny Clifton,
Oh! That's from Port Simpson.
Yeah, he died a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He owned the quad, or his I pitched on the quad, so that was his thing, right? Yeah, I can remember Johnny Clifton. We were fishing in Bear River, right? And it was illegal to tie up to something, huh? To tie the thing to something. So he run up and wrapped the tree up. Then right over there on the plane, the logs come from colors, huh? So I cut the lines loose and left him on the beach. Don't be crazy.
Yeah.
It's almost as bad as when you sent that guy out of the plane.
You know, he told you that. Yeah. Yeah, he...
Yeah, he went and hid under the tree.
Yeah, he...
We all got a $25 fine, I think.
I was talking to my cousins as well over the weekend because they were like teenagers in high school in the 70s when in Washington there was a Judge Bolt decision where the natives got half the fishing rights down there.
Okay.
And so there was lots of like racial tension and that sort of stuff. And Dad's walking around with a t-shirt that says Judge Bolt's favorite, you know, he's always picking at people, you know,
cheeky. That's
just cheeky, very cheeky, yeah, he went to court because he got caught outlawing a river that he wasn't supposed to be in, and he's got the court evidence of him walking out of the water, and he's got this headlight on behind his head, you know, to see, and you just see that look on his face like, oh, shit, I've been caught or whatever. And so he goes to court with my uncle who's got a cane, my grandmother who's, like, calling him.
And the two kids.
And,
the two kids.
And so then after...
Just both.
And so after, you know, court, they let him off. He asked for the pictures. And he said, we had those pictures. I don't know what happened to them for years. But on the back were like official court documents. Those were like our family pictures. Oh, yeah, and there's Dad getting caught for
I went before Judge Bolt. All the old people ahead of me are getting $25,000 fines. And all like that, and the Judge Bolt said, do you have legal reputation? I told him, no. I told him, I ain't going to give no money to them lawyers. And he let me out, he kind of smiled. And then I know he's getting a kick out of me. Especially with my mother there and busting with a cane and these two kids.
Yeah. Quite a
child. Yeah. I pulled some stuff in my time.
Yeah.
And I've had fun doing it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you mind if I take some pictures?
No.
Okay. That means you just put that back on. You never did tell me.
You know the province, and you know the Vancouver Sun, and the Globe and Mail?
Yes.
They've all done exactly like you have, given me interviews.
Yeah.
And I tell them what the Canadian government has done to the First Nations veterans. and none of it got printed. And with the Globe and Mail, they did about 3 hours on the taking pictures and all that. And I told them exactly the truth, what the Canadian government had done to First Nations veterans.
Like what?
Like having them give up their Indian rights to go in the army. And getting them back after they've done their service to Canada. They have done the First Nations really rotten. And I told the province, the Sun-Lan Globe and Mail, exactly what I'm telling you, and none of them got friended.
Why do you think that is?
Huh?
Why do you think that is?
Because the Canadian government just has too much influence on them. They don't want to get blackballed.
Do you think it was different for you in the States then?
I never have done an interview in the States.
But being in the U.S. Army, do you think it was different than being in the Canadian?
No, the American Army, you're just in the Army. You're just one of the soldiers. Mm-hmm. I think the Canadians really thought highly of the First Nations veterans, you know, like that fellow from Winnipeg that was the most decorated man in the Canadian service, and then they let him die a drunk, the Hunter, what was his name?
Not sure.
Or was his name Prince?
I don't know.
Tommy Prince?
Tommy Prince. Mm-hmm. He was in Korea with the Princess Pat. I've met his nephews. I was hoping to get a museum set up in right on 18th Street in Maine, on that four square building.
Carnegie?
Not the, across from Carnegie.
Okay.
Let me tell you another thing I'm thinking of. I was a veteran at the Friendship Center. So after the meeting, I made my way to 18th Street in Maine, and there was this cab. I had a lady in there right on Maine, and I looked in the window. I says, "Can you call me a cab?" He looked at me and he says, "Two blocks down the street, there's a public telephone. Go and use that." That got me really mad, you know. I says, "You goddamn Hindu," like that. That's how I said Hindu, you know. And he got mad. He didn't like that. He jumped out of his cab and went running around. And I got a little tick then. I just cold. Anyhow, I knocked him down on the street. And there over Crossway at the Carnegie Building, they had a raid on for dope. And there I was right across the street and knocked this guy down. And this guy got up from the pavement and he went running around to his car. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get charged, you know. But there was a cab behind him. I went there, I said, we got to get out of here. And he was another East Indian, and he was laughing up a storm. He saw what happened. He saw I knocked the heck out of this guy. So I was in his cab and got gone. And Jack called me.
Oh no! I'm thinking in your 20s. No, this was a few years ago. You may be a little bit crazy.
At about 70, I'm doing this.
You're a growing concern.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he'll
be 80 tomorrow.
80 tomorrow.
Yeah. I always say I ain't scared of nobody, whether they're married or not, because I know I can outrun anybody.
I move real fast
when I'm scared. You can't catch me if I'm scared.
I hear you're going to B.B. King.
Yeah.
You're lucky.
That's Johnny Rivers. Holy cow.
Just spoiled.
Yeah.
Anything to keep you out of trouble.
Yep. Bingo or concerts.
Yeah, he warned me, so he's got a bingo dabber in his pocket. Yeah.
I'm pretty accurate with that bingo
See, that skill, they don't teach you that when you join the airborne.
No.
That's
or a residential school.
No. That's awesome.
Well, I'm fairly close to Mickey. Yeah. Don Nelson was a real good friend of mine. Kind of a nephew or cousin.
Yeah, they're related to Effrey.
Okay.
Alex.
Yeah.
Alex is, he was my soccer coach.
Which team were you on?
I've started with the T-Birds.
Okay.
Yeah.
All the Hunts I'm close to from Fort Rufus, they're all my friends.
Yeah, Alex started as my soccer coach almost about 10 years ago, and then just got really close to him and stuff because he was Effie's nephew.
Okay.
And that's what I think kind of took us under our wings.
Yeah, I used to carve with the Hunts and Surrey.
You used to carve?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did.
Well, that's one of mine. That's the spotted owl one. I have some real good ones. Oh, let me show you this one.
Okay.
This is the only one I really have used. It's a speaker set. And that's eiderdown, that's eagle eiderdown out there, and thunderbird, and here is the killer whales, dog salmon, that's sockeye there, then the whale, and the canoe.
And he did this bentwood box.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's my whole chest.
Yeah.
And then this one, I love that one.
This happened after I retired. When I was at UBC, Audrey Hawthorne, she asked, pause it.
Okay, Audrey Hawthorne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At UBC, I knew her real well. Mm-hmm. We used to, she had a little museum about the size, half the size of that hall there, and she, I would have to sit. Sit with the people come by and tell them what things were. I used to get 50 cents an hour.
That's so good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, maybe you can get a picture of this. This is
for Audrey Hawthorne.
This is his, started doing button blankets.
Yeah.
He did this for himself.
This is my... You want a picture taken?
Yeah. Yes. You have to use the flash.
I can just see the top of your head.
Did he do this?
How's that? It looks really silly.
My fingertips.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's a button blanket. It takes about 3 weeks to 6 weeks to make one of them. The other one.
What haven't you done?
Yeah.
I've done about 14 of these.
Yeah.
All different.
This one he made for my brother Curtis. And this one is... End of the trail.
That's amazing.
End of the line.
Yeah.
Which one did I make you?
You made me the, let me go see if I got it upstairs. The Animal Kingdom. And he did one for Sarah when she graduated high school. I'll go get it.
Thank you
Take
for showing
me.
Takes
3 weeks to 6 weeks to do one of these. Mm-hmm. Just get down there and start sewing. And when I'm carving, I think Long Charlie Wilson is with me, my grandpa. Mm-hmm. Or Dotsilo, my uncle, he used to carve.
What was his name?
Dotsilo, Johnny Wilson.
Dotsilo?
That's his Indian name. Oh. But he'd pick up a stick and just start carving and have a good totem pole done in a day or two. That's the way he was. And with these button blankets, I think Effrey is with me. We've done that. I like that spotted owl.
It's beautiful.
I've got a mate to that one. It's a white one. I give it to Tony, I think. I've given myself, like I was offered, $5,000 for cannibal bird, huh?
Mm-hmm. Come some?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She took them to school to show them. They're at her house. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yes. I'm giving this to Sarah. These are walrus seal bones.
Okay.
I'm going to give that to Sarah because she's into Indian. I just got this from a lot.
That's what he does. He receives and he gives it away. Recycles.
Yeah. I figure Sarah will really appreciate something genuine, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Lonnie.
Yeah, it's like, that's exactly why I learned it. That's why I gave Charles back that mask. Things just get moved around, and he gave a mask to
my brother Buttons. He had died with a head mask, had Wyatt's on there, and had a bear for my brother Calvin. He was a bear, a grizzly bear.
Yeah, and so when he passed away, it was given to Charles, and then somewhere along the line, Dad got it, and he ended up giving it to my ex-fiance, and so I ended up, when we split up, I said, nope, you ain't getting that. Gave it back to my brother Charles. He came here today, he said, where is that mask? I said, I gave it to Charles.
A gift isn't a gift until it's given twice.
Yeah,
I really like that mask.
Charles,
head mask.
Like my sister Mabel has her whole walls with his mask. I don't know if Gina has any at all, does she?
She's supposed to have some.
Yeah, and then I got the Bentwood box and that one and the speaker stabbed, and so my brother Charles didn't have anything, so I figured I would share the wealth.
Okay.
You can have this one, but
a little bit.
That's all you get.
I've used a speaker staff one time. My grandson Ray got killed, and I used it one time.
So you just kind of put everything together and.
So what I'll do is, this will be transferred to the digital collection at the UVic Archives, and I'll be making a list of basically what it contains, and I might transcribe this one, though they don't want me to. I might, just because there's some words like mapping out.
Are you going to interview any other veterans?
Yes. I did 4 before, and I will be doing more. There's somebody named Bingo. And Duncan.
Yeah, I know Bingo well.
He's cheeky too.
Yeah.
I've interviewed a few others. I've put messages
if
out to
can,
them.
Moody Michelle is in. What's the name of that little town up? And there's Ricky, he was a real veteran. Moody Michelle was with MacArthur all the way through. He's got more medals than you know what to do with him. I go to his place sometimes.
Which one is that?
Up from Mission.
By the Upper Fraser River there, where you fished?
No, this side. What's the name of that damn town?
Mission, there's Agassiz, Chilliwack.
No, it's on the other side of the river from Chilliwack.
I don't know.
Where does the Albion Ferry?
Gosh, my memory's gone.
You've got a good memory. You remember lots of things.
Like,
I always have to ask him, was I going to the bathroom or coming back?
Yeah, well, that's good to know. You got to know that.
Well, if you remember, you can let me know. Mm-hmm. For sure. And yeah. I'm not just interviewing Aboriginal vets, but that's my focus. Mm-hmm. But I might meet the man that Bingo was in a foxhole with.
Mm.
He got stuck in a foxhole with a little boy for like 3 days. Oh. And he was at a garage sale in Duncan. And a guy walked up to him and said, "Do you know who I am?" "No." "Do you remember a foxhole in Nam?" "Yeah, there was some kid in there for 3 days." "I was the kid," he said. "It was at a garage sale in Duncan."
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Abner Soren, I know well. He's
who?
In Duncan. Abner Soren?
Abner Soren?
He's just somebody I know. He's not a veteran, huh?
Okay.
But he and I used to fish together.
Oh, okay.
I tell him everything he knows. It took 5 minutes. So that shows you how much I know. I pulled that on Bill. His Jody and Corey had got through law school, huh? And the chief judge, what's his name?
Williams. Are you talking about Wacky
Williams? Wacky Williams.
Yeah, Brian Williams.
He's chief judge of B.C. for about 11 years. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, they had this big gathering. And Bill was kind of bragging on everybody. And I said, "My brother Rusty will say something." I said, "He shouldn't have said that." Anyhow, I telling them about when Wacky was young, you know, and he was Kelvin's best friend, Anyhow, I was telling them all about that, and I said, "Wacky and Billy, I've taught them everything I know, and everything that they know."
It
took 5 minutes. So that shows you how much I know. And Wacky was in his cup. He was red from boozing, huh? Anyhow, he liked
your
bust out laughing. I was telling Billy, "You shouldn't have said that."
So they're doing a documentary then, or you were saying something about up north, or they're doing a movie?
Movie is going to be happening. I'm not working on it for sure, but Bingo is, and Richard Blackwolf with Nava, they're doing something together, and they're looking at recreating battle scenes and
cool.
So they mentioned that to me when I had met them. So yeah, I'll let you know any info that I get, and they might be looking for people to
for extras, stunt
people, production assistants. So I'll make sure that
For sure.
Thank you.